Our second case this morning is 2021-756 and 2021-769, the State of Ohio versus Marquis Bolar. Mr. Hirsch.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Max Hirsch on behalf of Marquis Bolar. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Firearm specifications are sentence enhancements. For that reason, when a count that carries a specification merges with another, resulting in no sentence on that count, there is nothing to be enhanced. Although Revised Code Section 2929.14b1g is triggered when a person is found guilty of an enumerated offense, the authority to impose firearm specification sentences under that section remains dependent on the underlying counts surviving merger. That is because sentencing for specifications is contingent on sentencing for their predicate offenses. This court should reverse and hold that specifications can only enhance sentences that are imposed, and that the B1G subsection of the firearm specification sentencing statute does not provide an exception to this general rule. This case ultimately boils down to the intersection between two concepts, merger and the nature of specifications.
Counsel, your client was found guilty of the offense that the firearm spec attached to, correct?
He was found guilty of the involuntary manslaughter, which had a firearm specification properly attached to it, correct?
Okay. And then he was sentenced on what?
So I apologize. He was found guilty of the involuntary manslaughter and felonious assault and weapons under disability. The trial court attached a firearm specification to the involuntary manslaughter which he was sentenced on, but also imposed a firearm specification associated with the felonious assault count.
Felonious assault
for which
merged
he was not
with the manslaughter.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So he was found guilty of it. He just wasn't sentenced on it.
Correct. He received no sentence for the felonious assault count, but the court nonetheless imposed a firearm specification sentence for that count.
Yeah, I understand what it did, but I'm saying that I'm wondering, is it enough to be found guilty of the offense that has the spec and then only sentenced on the spec?
Right, and
I mean, the offense of felonious assault didn't disappear. It just wasn't sentenced. It wasn't there for the purposes of sentencing. You still have a conviction.
So there was a guilty finding on the felonious assault count, but he wasn't convicted of the felonious assault count in the merger, in this court's understanding of conviction under Whitfield.
Right.
Correct. So he received no sentence for felonious assault. And so, of course, the core of this case is that B1G subsection, which we have acknowledged the convicted of or pleaded guilty to phrase, we acknowledge that refers to a guilty finding. However, it's not a specific enough statement that says that a trial court now gains the authority to impose a firearm specification sentence even when there's no sentence on the underlying count. And the reason for that is because the merger statute is the legislature's primary statement of when sentencing for allied offenses is warranted.
And let's talk about that. When we talk merger, kind of following up on the Chief's question, we're merging sentences, not verdicts, correct?
Correct. The guilty, yes, there you can be found guilty of multiple offenses, but not sentenced on all of them.
So it's a merger of sentences. We use the phrase the merge the two counts or whatever, but it's really a merger of sentences.
I think that's fair, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Under the merger statute, it specifically says a person can be found guilty of multiple allied offenses, but you are protected from being sentenced for more than one of them when the rough factors are met. And the court, or the dissent below, and the 8th District and the 9th District and Doyle and Roper, they followed this court's decision in State versus Ford in analyzing whether it's possible to sentence someone for a freestanding firearm specification, and they concluded it was not. Because in Ford, this court went through great pains to say that firearm specifications are a sentencing provision. They result in enhanced sentences. So the courts below, or excuse me, the courts of appeals reading that concluded that if there's no sentence for a count because of merger, there's nothing that exists that can be enhanced by the specification.
But Mr. Hirsch, I'm looking at State v. Whitfield that a conviction refers to both the guilty verdict and a sentence, so that the determination of the defendant's guilt for committing the allied offense remains intact, both before and after the merger of the allied offenses. There's been this discussion in the law about does conviction refer to both guilty verdict and the sentence, and if that's the case, doesn't that weigh in favor of allowing for the second imposition of time for that specification on the merged offense?
No, that would weigh against it. This court's understanding of convictions in Whitfield is one of the primary points in our favor here, because if Mr. Baller couldn't have been, if he wasn't and he was not sentenced on the felonious assault count, there was no sentence to be enhanced by any specification anymore.
Except if conviction could refer to both guilty verdict and a sentence, then your predicate offense is, by implication, sentenced, then you could go ahead and impose that second specification.
I would say only if a person was sentenced on all of the counts. So if the felonious assault was stemming from some kind of separate conduct, he could have received multiple firearm specification sentences.
I understand if there had been two victims and the felonious assault was with one, and the court may have merged, but sometimes this question of conviction and whether the definition of it is conviction or conviction and sentence comes into play when there's a new law and we're trying to decide, and the law happens to come into effect after the conviction but before the sentence, and then at what point do we say it applies? And so we've seen some authority that says conviction means the verdict or the conviction and the sentence, and then others argue that it doesn't.
Right, and it certainly depends on the context. So in the merger statute, where it talks about convictions, that means, based on Whitfield, that means a guilty finding and a sentence. And in the firearm specification sentencing scheme, when it talks about convicted of or pleads guilty to, that phrase is a term of art that just means a guilty finding. And putting that in context, though, what the B1G subsection there really does is it provides an exception to the preceding B1B subsection, which creates a general rule that you can only, in general, be sentenced for one firearm specification when your conduct stems from the same act or transaction. So
under G, though, if I remember correctly, yeah, the sentencing court shall impose on the offender the prison term specified under Division B1A of this section for each of the two most serious specifications. Doesn't that show an intent that it's for each?
No, because the reason for that, the reason that's wrong is because I'd go back to the merger statute again being as the primary statement of when cumulative punishment is authorized. Obviously, the majority below, what they said is that this is an exception to the general prohibition of cumulative punishment, but it's simply not specific enough to do that, because read in context, it's the 29-29-14B, what it does is it creates a sentencing scheme for sentencing for specifications. As my friends on the other side even said in their brief, that statute and the merger statutes are two ships passing in the night. They make no reference to one another. It's not a clear enough exception. And one other point I'd make that I didn't really develop in my brief, but is relevant, is that phrase, convicted of or pleads guilty to, appears all over the criminal code. It appears in all of these specification statutes. It appears in all the registry statutes. But that doesn't stand to reason that a guilty finding necessarily means you can have a specification imposed on you. So, for example, the Fourth District in Robinson, they said that a forfeiture specification wasn't enforceable when the count that carried the specification merged. If you look at the forfeiture specification statute, it uses convicted of or pleads guilty to.
Does it have any of the language about such as for each of the two most serious specifications of which the defender is convicted or to which the offender pleads guilty, as, you know, Section G?
No, but I think the state's position, if they're right here, it would apply equally to that, because if they're right that convicted over plea, if they're right that a guilty finding can result in a sentence for a specification even without a sentence on the underlying count, that would apply all over the code. And again, that's why this statement in B1G isn't specific enough. It's generic language that appears everywhere. But again, as I said, I think the most important thing is that it's part of a self-contained set of rules.
Let me ask you, does, if we adopt your position, does it kind of encourage gamesmanship by prosecutors to get an extra gun specification? Say, for example, you had someone who was charged with aggravated robbery. Could you also charge them with theft? Prosecutor wouldn't do that ordinarily, but if you did, could you get two gun specs out of that aggravated robbery?
I think that works only if the counts aren't subject to merger.
Well, but
so it would result in increased punishment regardless, because that person could be found guilty of and sentenced on all counts anyway.
Well, but if they're subject to merger. So a theft would merge with an aggravated robbery. If you put a gun spec on each one, they'd merge. But under your theory, you could get the aggravated robbery plus two gun specs.
No, our theory would be that you could only get one gun spec, because there's only one count on which that person would be sentenced. And I think actually the state's position is what could lead to gamesmanship, because one right, okay, maybe I misunderstood, I apologize, but the state's position is what leads to gamesmanship, because if there's a single act, they could charge every conceivable criminal offense that could potentially fall under that act. The person would only be sentenced on one, presumably the most serious one, but then that person could receive specifications for four, five, six, however many counts there are, simply put. So that could be, you know, 4, 12, 20, you know, even more additional years, even though the legislature's determined for that single act with a single victim and a single harm, that person can only be sentenced for the single count of the prosecutor's choice.
Your argument. Well, then, what's the phrase for each of the two most serious specs? What's that mean, then?
Again, it's just...
You're saying there's three, four, five. You could get a whole bunch of them. That sounds to me like you only get two.
Well, the scheme says that when there are multiple counts that carry specifications, and among them is you have committed an enumerated offense, you have to get at least two specs. The court can impose all of them. Our position is there's just a gloss on that those counts to which the specifications attach must have survived merger in the first place. And I think that's the only wrinkle I'd add to what you said. And unless the court has any other questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gianner?
May it please the court, my name is Tim Yonner. I'm here on behalf of the Stark County Prosecutor's Office. When a statute's meaning is plain, that statute must be applied, not interpreted. Mr. Bowler's argument is that 2929-14B1G does not do or cannot do what it says it does. However, the court would need to either add or change language to the statute in order to find for him in this particular instance. Court held in State versus Ford, the specifications do not merge with the underlying offense. Court also held in State versus Whitfield that a finding of guilt survives the merger of the underlying offense. The specification in this particular case thus does not cease to exist on merger of the underlying offense, nor does the finding of guilt necessary to impose an additional sentence on the specification. And I just wanted to add a couple points of clarification, particularly in response to one of Justice Berner's earlier questions. I wanted to circle back to that. State versus Whitfield does an excellent job of distinguishing between the two different meanings or potential meanings of the term conviction. It'd be paragraphs 12 and 13. I hate to borrow from the court's prior work, but it's a very excellent statement of just the distinction between those two terms, and there are different circumstances in which conviction simply means a finding of guilt. whether that be by plea or by jury verdict.
What about the hypothetical I posed? I mean, does this invite prosecutors to add on charges that would merge anyway, just so they can get an extra gun spec? So you had someone with an aggravated robbery, you ordinarily charge them with that, but if you had a theft, you could get two gun specs.
I do see your point, and I think that I'll start with Justice Fisher's point from earlier. The B1G does have that safety valve provision that provides that only two gun specs may attach attach.
It would seem kind of odd if someone had one aggravated robbery and the legislature provided for one gun spec for that aggravated robbery, but by charging them with theft too, you can get two aggravated robbery gun specs. So you could add another year or 3 years or to the sentence.
I see the point. It is odd. At the same time, if the legislature had wanted to, they could have simply made the gun spec worth 6 years instead. I do understand that it creates an additional procedural wrinkle in there, especially at the indictment stage, again, it maybe adds a little bit more mental work on behalf. But at the same time, especially in this particular instance, this was a plea. Again, the plea has to go before the judge as well. So this is really a three-party system or in some sense. So there's additional checks and balances on that sort of gamesmanship. And
maybe in a police situation, but if went to a jury trial, he's convicted.
I definitely see the point. I understand that it does add an additional wrinkle to this whole procedure, especially in the situation of a jury trial, because they're the jury could conceivably find in your hypothetical that there is a, I think it was aggravated robbery plus, could you refresh my memory?
I think I said aggravated robbery and theft, but it could be anything with a lesser offense.
Well, there is an additional safeguard against that, which is that B1G actually has a list of specified qualifying felonies.
But all you need is the most serious one to be a qualifying felony, right?
Or any of them being a qualifying felony, but yes.
So as far as if we flip this around, a person who is convicted and sentenced on a gun spec, in terms of judicial release, they have to the time on the gun spec is served first and it's mandatory time, so they couldn't be released with for instance, just say it's one with 3 years until 3 years had elapsed. So essentially, if we look at it the way the state argues. In that situation, if even with a merged predicate offense, but two gun specs, it would be a 6-year mandatory time before they'd be eligible for judicial release, correct?
I do believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I also wanted to circle back to another point that we had been discussing about the plain meaning of the statute. The idea that these gun specifications, I guess, drop out when the underlying sentence is merged. I don't believe that has any support within the plain text of the statute. And in fact, in Whitfield in particular, again, deals with the idea that a finding of guilt survives the merger of the underlying offense. And I did want to offer a real brief correction here. The statute requires a finding of guilt on both the gun specification itself and on the underlying offense. And so there's actually, technically, there's 6 findings of guilt in this particular case. There's 3 counts, each with the gun specification. So in the formula for applying the statute itself is, there must be, in this particular instance, there's actually 4 findings of guilt and only 3 sentences resulting. Just wanted to clarify that again, there needs to be the finding of guilt on the gun specifications themselves, which again in this case was accomplished by plea. Again, those findings of guilt, whether they be by plea or by jury verdict, do in fact survive the merger of the offenses. And that's, according to the plain text of the statute, is simply all that's required in order to impose them to run consecutively. And again, circling back to State versus Ford, The gun specification itself, in that particular case, it was a gun specification attached to a firearms under disability charge. And the issue in Ford was whether those two merge, and Ford held that they did not. I think it's not incorrect to be looking at the 2941.25 for purposes of merger of offenses, but these specifications are not offenses. I think that 2929.14b1b is the correct merger provision to be looking at.
But as Justice Fischer said, when we're talking about merger, aren't we looking at sentences? And a conviction, of course, is the finding of guilt in a sentence. So how do we reconcile that?
I think it's fair that the chief evil sought to be guarded against by these murder statutes is essentially inconsistent sentences or in sentences that the legislature did not intend. But in this particular instance, circling back to the language itself of the merger statute, again, 2929.41, that specifically only applies by its terms to offenses, not to specifications. I mean, that was the holding in Ford. So I understand that, going back to Justice DeWine's point, that there is a little bit of...
You can stack on a whole bunch of specifications to increase the time.
And I understand that that's obviously a legitimate concern, but at the same time, the legislature did provide actually two safety valves within B1G with that in mind. One, you have to have a qualifying offense. There's only a few of them. They're all mostly the most serious crimes that could be committed. And then secondly, there's a provision that allows for only two consecutive sentences, and then thereafter it's within the trial court's discretion. They would have to make the findings necessary to impose consecutive sentences. And of course, that's all reviewable upon appeal. And in fact, it does get reviewed on appeal rather regularly.
But counsel, the two crimes charged here are the same act, right? They're just...
They did merge. Yes, yeah. For basically that reason, yes.
So you think the legislature intended to, you could charge just two on the same act, and you could stack the specs, even though it's an enhancement for a sentence that doesn't get imposed?
I do believe that the legislature did intend for this to play out that way. Number one, again, circling back to the language of B1G, that particular provision is literally, that's what it does. It simply mandates two consecutive sentences. So I think that's fairly clear indication that at least, we may disagree about precisely where that applies, but I don't think that there's any possible way to dispute that's what the statute does, at least at a base level.
I would agree with you if there was two different crimes, and that could take place during the same act. Someone could commit a burglary, go into a house, and then commit a felonious assault with a firearm. And
you're saying just two non-mergeable offenses,
right.
Certainly, I think we would all agree that the statute applies plainly to that scenario. I think the challenge that we have here is that this is the same act; it has merged. And I understand the logical kind of thought process that goes behind that. I don't want to discount that, but again, I don't believe that idea that the specification simply drops down because its underlying offense does not have a sentence, doesn't necessarily, it doesn't find any support within the text of the statute. And then, again, the statute triggers off a finding of guilt, again, on the specification and on the underlying offense. And in this particular instance, we happen to know from prior case law that these findings of guilt survive the merger of the underlying offense.
Counsel, this was a plea, right?
Correct, yes.
And there was no question, or there was no discussion of sentence with a plea?
I don't believe there was an agreed upon sentence between the prosecution and the defense.
Okay. But all this talk about specs and whether you're going to be on a merger one or more specs, that can be remedied by the judge as well.
Correct, yes, absolutely.
Sentencing. It's always something the judge can take into consideration, or it can be, you know, negotiated at a plea. This isn't necessarily written in stone that this has to happen.
No. In this particular case, that offers a little bit of an example. There was actually a count one, which was a murder charge, which was dropped by agreement as part of the plea. So again, in that particular instance, that would have, again, at that point, this would possibly be a, and they all had firearm specifications attached. So again, this provides a little bit of an illustration of how this plays out, at least in that limited example.
In this example before us, would the trial court have had any discretion to impose the additional gun specification? Is it the state's position that it's the statute requires that the merge the specification on the merge count still be applied to the sentence?
Yes, Your Honor. In the instance specifically where there are two specifications, any more than two, and it's the third and beyond fall within the trial judge's discretion.
But that this one is not. It's
correct, yes.
Required.
But
okay.
You could have dropped, I mean, the state could have dropped the gun spec.
Correct, yes.
Did the trial court outline at the plea colloquy that the defendant would be sentenced consecutive?
Yes.
On the specs?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, if there are no further questions, I'll conclude. Once the statute's meaning is plain, it simply needs to be applied and not interpreted. And in this instance, we believe that the statute's meaning is plain. And again, in accordance with Ford and Whitfield, we know that the guilty findings survive the merger of the underlying offense. The guilty findings are all that's necessary to impose the two consecutive gun specifications. And therefore, we would ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel.
I'd like to start just with a vocabulary point, and that is the merger statute discusses the merger of offenses. And as my friend on the other side said correctly, that specifications are not offenses. But as this court said in State versus Ford, specifications are intrinsically tied to offenses. You can only be sentenced for a specification if you were sentenced for the underlying count. And even though the legal issue there was different, this court's description of specifications in Ford was not dicta because it was necessary to the court's outcome in that case. So even though, of course, the legal issue here is distinguishable, there would be, for this court to say that conclusion in Ford was incorrect, that would mean Ford would have to rest on something else that this court didn't discuss. So I just want to start there. And secondly, I want to address a point that the Attorney General made in their brief. They basically said that the legislature's hands are tied if they rule in our favor, and that's not correct. Simply put, the legislature just has to make a specific statement if it wants to make an exception to cumulative punishment. And the statement here that's in the B1G subsection of the firearm specification statute is not clear enough. And on the record, since it came up, just discussing what kind of happened in the record during the plea colloquy, there was an agreement that Mr. Baller would plead guilty to counts 2, 3, and 4. The prosecutor deferred to defense counsel in the court as to whether the involuntary manslaughter and felonious assault would merge. Defense counsel argued that it did, and the trial court agreed. Both sides did disagree, however, on whether the B1G section permitted the trial court to impose a specification for the felonious assault count as well, because as Justice Stewart alluded to, the state's position was that it was mandatory, but defense counsel argued, as we're arguing here, that the merger does not permit that arrangement despite the mandatory language. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll conclude by asking this court to reverse and adopt the Eighth District's position in Doyle. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.